Yeah.
All right. Hello. Cool. Hello. There we go. cool. I really hope I don't waste your time. When you have like this many engineers in a room for an hour and you start like doing the math, it's like hourly rate per people, you know, like a $15,000 talk, and like you have other things that you could be doing. So I appreciate that you came here and you hung out with us at VS Live and that you're spending your hour here. I even appreciate the people in the back who are checking email, because I saw that you were checking email. I know you're just here for the Wi-Fi, and that's fine. But yeah, I'll do my very best not to waste your time. That said, this is probably a big waste of time. But I've got a lot of demos. I've got lots of bits. I put on .NET 2 that came out yesterday on my machine. But my machine is also running, you know, beta drivers of this and that and daily builds of Windows. So if it blue screens, it's not .NET's fault. It's very likely Microsoft's fault, but it's not .NET's. So. I wanted to give a little bit of historical context that some of you might remember and some of you may not. This is some of the articles about us open sourcing .NET. Notice the date. Did y'all know that we've tried to do this multiple times? Yeah. And failed each time. We have actually tried to open source .NET at least 3 or 4 times, but a lot of things weren't right on the internet. They weren't ready. GitHub didn't exist. Git didn't exist. The concept of social kind of collaborative coding didn't exist. You know, we had SourceForge, we had CVS, but we also didn't really understand licensing appropriately. I didn't work at Microsoft at this time. I was just a consumer of .NET. But when .NET very first came out, they tried to open source it, except they called it shared source. And they didn't give it a good license. The real licenses that were happening in the late 90s, early 2000s were things like GPL, the viral kind of copyleft licenses. They didn't want to do that. So they did this thing called the shared source license, and they open sourced .NET, they really did, in 2001, except it wasn't open source, it was source opened. It was, look at this, don't touch it. Just look at the nice source. They literally zipped it up, removed the good stuff, and then gave it a license that no one had ever heard of. So they took out the garbage collector and the jitter, which are kind of important, and they put in naive implementations of that, and they then gave it to colleges. And then the intent was that I guess the jitter and the garbage collector would be left as an exercise to the reader. And it didn't exactly take off, right? And I think that's why Java got the leg up on Microsoft, because they didn't really jump in all the way. So then we had things like ASP.NET and MVC start to do real open source in the open. We had CodePlex, we had smarter licensing, we eventually got rid of the Microsoft reference license and the different Microsoft licenses and just went MIT and Apache, used some common sense licenses. And but this was multiple iterations, but I just think it's interesting to point out that we really did like intend to open source that thing 16 years ago. It just didn't work out. Somewhere around 2008, open source for the web framework really started in earnest. And people like Phil Hack, who now works at GitHub, worked very hard to get that that really to be an open source project that took takebacks. That was the big legal hurdle for us. The idea that, you know, your code is going to ship in Visual Studio. And even now in 2017, when we have conversations with people about how it's all open source, we'll go to customers, like big customers that have thousands of licenses of Visual Studio, and then they'll say, well, we don't really want to use it right now because we hear it's open source. How do we know it's going to go through the same you know, security checks and localization checks and things like that? So we have to explain to people that the code that you put in a pull request and give to us goes through the exact same process as all other code, because everything is a pull request. A Microsoft engineer commits some code and it gets reviewed the exact same way that your pull request would get reviewed. And we also have to call out the difference between open source instances of code and then the Microsoft packaged version of code. How many people here run Chrome? Okay, how many people here run Chromium? Just to be different? Is that why you're doing that? Or what's your reasoning? Were you just being arbitrary? Okay. I knew you were. What's your reasoning?
It came with Ubuntu.
It came with Ubuntu, okay. So no good reason. No, so you know the difference, though, between Chromium and Chrome, right? Chromium is upstream of Chrome. Chromium is an open source project. Chrome is the instance, the Google-branded, supported, official, trademark, registered, copyright version of Chromium, right? They packaged it up and said, here, right? You can run dailies of Ubuntu and the things that are upstream, or you can get the canonical distro of it as well. Surprisingly, it's difficult to explain those kinds of things to customers, and I'm going to try to explain it to you in a couple of different ways, assuming that my daily build of PowerPoint doesn't crash. Another thing we want to point out to people is that the number of .NET Core downloads that we're seeing, .NET Core specifically, and I'll explain all the differences soon, 40% of them are new developers. That's a good thing. We want to change the demographic of .NET. I think that .NET has the... It's possible that we could become COBOL if we keep aging, if we don't bring new people in. If we don't bring in a very inclusive and supportive group, because if I went to I went to a high school and started teaching kids to code, right? Let's say I go teach like black girls code and I say, hey kids, we're gonna learn C sharp, yay! All right, first we're gonna download Visual Studio. It's a 2 gig ISO file. You all have up to date Windows machines, right? And then tomorrow, after we've installed, come on kids, we're learning Visual Studio, woo! Right? What are the kids learning? What are the young people learning? Apt, get, install, Ruby, Go, Node, Python, literally everything but .NET. So we need to make people understand that there's value in Visual Studio and a giant IDE that does everything, but there's also value in 0 to 10 miles an hour in 10 minutes. It should be possible to take any kind of computer and teach someone .NET, even maybe a Chromebook. I want to be able to go to those 15-year-olds and teach them .NET and get them excited about it before I then dump Visual Studio on them and oppress them, right? I also want them to know that they can participate in open source. 62% of the GitHub contributions for the CoreFX and CoreCLR repos are from outside of Microsoft. More people helped write .NET Core than are inside. And again, 40% of the downloads are by new developers. So we want to make sure we make them happy. We want to make sure that we also don't alienate our base. You'd be surprised how often I'll spend some time at the command line teaching someone .NET, and I get some angry, what happened to the visual in Visual Studio? Like you can have both. You can pop out to the command line. I don't know. I'm surprised how many people don't like DOS, like the command line, or Bash, or PowerShell. We'll talk a little bit about that when I get to the demos. This is a chart we made in Power BI looking at contributions to .NET in 2015, and then 2016, and then if we look at all contributions in 2017, there's even some people apparently on a boat. I don't know what they're... Somebody on a cruise ship. I don't know if that's the Bermuda Triangle right there. I don't think that's Cuba, but I do think that's a boat. It's either a boat or someone who lives at 0, 0. So people are doing .NET. The big problem that we have right now, and the thing that you can help me with as users of .NET or as enthusiasts, is to help explain it. Because Microsoft, you know, is really good at naming stuff and really even better at versioning things. It's confusing, but I think we can explain it to people. And when you can explain it to your boss and not freak out about .NET, that helps me out. So I want to explain a little bit about this before I get into some demos. .NET, despite the fact that we took over an entire top-level domain, thereby destroying my whole .org plan to take over the world, you know, if we could set that aside for a moment, is this overarching marketing term. It used to mean something. .NET used to mean the .NET framework that comes with Windows, right? And you would install it because you wanted to develop stuff or because you wanted to run paint.NET. Those are the only two reasons that you would ever install .NET, right? Now, .NET is this umbrella term, and there are instances of .NET. There are multiple .NETs. So I explain it to people. There is the .NET framework. That's the one that's Windows. We'll talk about that, and I do some demos. There's .NET Core that I'm going to show the most of, and .NET Core 2.0 came out yesterday. And then there's Mono that powers Xamarin and allows .NET code to run in other places. Do you know that there are other .NETs? There are other, like Longtail is long. There's a .NET that's called .NET Anywhere that someone wrote about 6 years ago that's an IL interpreter, but it runs IL. That's an instance of .NET. There are other .NETs out there. These are the big three, and those are the open source ones that are controlled by Microsoft. Okay? When we stack those things on top of this open source common infrastructure here, I think people forget how much of that is shared. They think that these .NETs are really separate, but they have the same compilers and the same languages, much of the same runtime components. Except in the past, we haven't done a really good job of enabling code sharing. How many people bought into portable class libraries or PCLs? A couple people? Feeling pretty good about that decision? No? So the intent was a righteous one. The idea was, hey, I wrote a Windows app. Now I'm going to go write a Xamarin app, and I want to share code. Seems like a totally legit, reasonable thing to do. Unfortunately, what they did is they took that Venn diagram and they focused on the intersection of things, which is a very small slice, and they said, here's class libraries you can use anywhere. And they wanted us to share those class libraries, except the intersection of those two worlds was really small, and you ended up with strings and lists and dates, and that was basically it. So your data transfer objects were shared, and the rest of it was all written multiple times. Am I lying? No? You're laughing because it hurts so much, right? So now .NET Standard 2.0, which was also finalized and released, is an API agreement, and it's an interface that we can all count on. It's a standard library that you can find everywhere. Now, this is where things get a little confusing because naming is a little bit hard. The .NET Standard Library isn't a .NET. It's just a contract. It's an agreement. Does anyone here have an Android phone? Like Android, where are my Android people at? Do you know the version of your Android phone? Is it like Juicy Fruit or Kit Kat or Skittles or something?
Yeah, it's an old one, but I don't know.
So it's an old one and you don't know. But you don't know the version, right?
5, I think.
5.3.2.6, something like that. Android is a big and complicated world with a very complicated API surface, and there's lots of different versions and lots of different form factors. The way that they simplify that from a developer's perspective is they have a thing called an API level. So I don't think about whether I'm going to support his phone and his thing. I say, I'm going to support API level 13. And here are all the APIs I have available. And then I can go and look up, here are the phones that work with API level 13. Then I want to say, oh, there's a really great new API. It's on API level 15. But that's going to mean that it won't work on his phone. He has to upgrade. But that layer of abstraction, that pointer, allows me to not worry about 5.2.x point whatever. It allows me to think about API levels. .NET Standard is a standard for .NET that says, hey, we have hash tables, we have lists, we have HTTP client, you know, we have stuff that you recognize. It's a lot like the BCL, the base class library that we all learned. The idea being that you know C sharp, you learned C sharp, but you spent your career doing WinForms. Then Xamarin comes out and you're like, awesome, I'm now an iPhone developer, and then you go over there and nothing looks familiar. That's an uncomfortable feeling. Then you start to question your skills and you start to get that gross feeling like maybe the .NET was a mistake. But if you can understand that standard library, that base class library, which you already do, system.io.file and all that kind of stuff, regular expressions, system.txt, where those things are, if you can count on those being on an Apple Watch, on a Raspberry Pi, in a Docker container, then you can really become cross-platform developers. The promise of .NET and why I've stuck at Microsoft so long, and now it'll be 10 years that I've been here, September, which is a long time. The promise is that I really like C sharp. It made me happy when I started. It was the language that I was supposed to be using. I actually went from VB.NET, and before that VB3 and VB6. C sharp was the language that I wanted to use, and I did WinForms, and then ASP.NET came out. And I became a web developer. And then MVC came out. And I became a web developer that cares about HTTP. That's the difference. And then Docker came out, and I figured out how to run ASP.NET stuff inside Docker. So now I'm a containers developer. And then the cloud happened, and now I'm a .NET developer who can put stuff into the cloud. .NET has shown up everywhere that I wanted to show up. And then I suddenly felt like I have more power. Having a library that is familiar everywhere, having an agreement that is familiar everywhere, means code reuse at a level of code reuse we haven't seen before, which means I really am a Xamarin developer, an iOS developer, an Android developer, a Watch developer. And we think that the promise of Standard Library 2 is going to make that happen. It's just a little bit confusing. Now, I'm still working on slides. I will show you some slides that I'm literally... this is like a... Oh, that didn't work. Hang on. Windows is freaking out. Are we back to the wrong resolution? Hang on. This is fun. I will just give commentary as I... Okay, so I'm looking for this one slide. I'm trying to figure out how to explain .NET because people basically don't like stuff that doesn't fit in a tweet. That's what's happened to America, to technology. So I spend a lot of my time answering tweets from people that are basically, WTF, Microsoft, I don't understand .NET, it's too many parts. It doesn't fit in a tweet. I'm sorry, I can't explain our developer platform to you in 140 characters. Right? Why don't you paste your NPM log to me in your tweet there and tell me how that's working out for you. Things don't fit in a tweet. Now, that said, I'm working on explaining it, at least in a slide deck. And I figure if I use enough colors and boxes that maybe it will distract you from what's really happening. But this is actually pretty good. I'm proud of this. Okay, so there's all these words in the .NET space. And I literally wrote this like yesterday, so I'm working on it. So if it sucks, we'll work it out. And I'll show you the ones that didn't make the cut, because they're much scarier. There's a platform, which is an operating system and some hardware. Like, I'm going to be running this on Raspbian on a Raspberry Pi. That would be a platform. Like, I'm going to target that platform. It's an operating system plus some hardware. So that'd be like ARM 32 on a Raspberry Pi. Okay? Then there's some implementation of .NET. That means I'm going to use some .NET and the libraries that come along with it that implement a version of that .NET standard. That means I could use Mono, as long as my libraries are all .NET Standard 2, or I could use .NET Core. So think about this. There's literally two ways to run .NET code on a Raspberry Pi right now. Like, that's how far we've come from, you know, Windows, all the things. To actually have choice at that level is pretty amazing. I can pick languages, C#, F#, VB. I can have the .NET SDK, Core SDK, or the .NET SDK. These are all things that implement that standard. They're runtimes and libraries that say, yeah, I can do system.txt and system.io. Okay? Have my runtime, my core CLR. Then I can make libraries, assemblies, DLLs. I can package them up into NuGets. You've made NuGet packages. You use things like JSON.NET. And then we can also have a thing called a meta package. Meta packages are just packages of packages. So in early versions of .NET Core, ASP.NET, if you said, I want to add ASP.NET, it was like 19 packages. And it was a little too much like Node for people. Well, so we made a meta package, ASP.NET Core.all. It's not really a package. It's just a package of packages. That way you could go and say, here's my console app. Now add ASP.NET. Just like you can make a Ruby console app and then make it like Rails. And then your application framework that sits on top of it is WPF or UWP or ASP.NET or third-party things like NancyFX or ServiceStack or if you're using F#, maybe like Swab or Fable. Your application framework is your choice. So I think where people get a little bit upset, a little bit confused, especially for new people, is that there's a lot of choices. There's a lot of choices. How do you tell a new person, pick the right application framework, pick the right language, pick the right runtime? So we're trying to both enable people to do what they want to do, which is lots and everything, but also for new people, constrain the choices so that they can be successful. Do you think that that's a pretty decent deck? Actual applause for my boxes and lines. Thank you very much. Now I'll show you the ones that did not make the muster. These ones are scary, okay? Just like recoil in horror now, okay? That one didn't make the, that was like in Amadeus, when it's like, there's too many notes. And I was trying to tell my boss, there's exactly as many notes as there need to be to explain .NET. That was another one. That was another one. So I think we agree that that adds value, right? Now, honest question, and I'm not fishing for compliments here. Does anyone, having paid attention for the last 5 minutes and looked at that slide, suddenly had a moment where they go, oh, okay, I get it, .NET, cool. Anyone have that moment, or did you already know all this stuff? Because I'm trying to get an understanding about how freaked out people are about .NET in the world right now. No one had a moment at all. No, that's disappointing. Did you know all this stuff already, and was it hard won, or is it already intuitive? Because I'm hearing it's not intuitive. That's why I made the slide.
There was another session an hour ago about
.NET. There was another session. So hang on a second. You're saying there was a session an hour ago that explained this. Could they have done it this good with color? Did it take them an hour to explain, and I did it in 5 minutes? No? Who gave the session? Because I want to talk to that person. Adam, you did it? How did you do? You felt pretty good about it? Well, they're in the room now. They can't talk frankly. What did you give your talk on, Adam? Because I feel like I might be wasting everyone's time.
Getting to the core of .NET Core.
Well, shit. What did you do, man? I asked Brent, are there any other .NET Core talks? He's like, no. You literally just talked about this. Do you want my slides? Okay. What demos did you give? Because I need to know if I'm going to throw all this away.
We looked at Visual Studio, overview of what NetStandard was.
Okay. Okay. Did you do anything at the command line? You did? Oh, we're crying out loud. Well, I mean, you can leave. That's fine. I will give it my way then, and then we'll go and yell at the organizers together. All right, let's do it like this. Let's talk about this, and we'll see how it compares to Adam's, because now it's a competition. So where is .NET today? It's down there in C, Windows, Microsoft, Framework, and then some stuff, right? And the versioning stopped making sense in 2011. Right now, at the .NET framework level, at the Windows level, people are afraid of .NET. They are. They're afraid of it because once they get things working, they just don't want to piss it off. Okay? A very typical story that I'll hear is I'll go to a company and they'll say, hey, you know, like this gentleman here, I'm going to use you because you're in the front row. I wrote this expense reporting application. It's on .NET 4. It works great. We put it in production. The production machine runs IIS. It has .NET 4. It's cool. Awesome. Like it. Great. .NET 4.7 comes out. C# 7 comes out. Let's say that this young lady decides to go and write her code on the new hotness. 4.7, 7.0, works great in her machine. She's rewritten some application. She goes to then production to put that live. And he's like, I don't want to mess with anything. She's like, no, you just install 4.7. It's an in-place upgrade. It's very highly compatible, you know, until it's entirely not compatible, right? It's 99% compatible, which is totally fine unless you're the 1%, and then it sucks to be you. Time passes. You continue to not let her be great. You insist on staying on .NET 4. She quits her job, becomes a Node developer, and then we've lost another great .NET person. You see? That's like the cycle, because people are afraid of pissing it off, right? Is that a fair statement? I don't want to reboot the thing. I don't want to do, you know, I just leave it alone. It works fine, right? You know that my blog runs on .NET 2? You know why? I don't want to piss it off. It works just fine. Everyone, hey, Scott, why don't you upgrade to the new great? Well, because I don't want to, it works today. I could make like a sidecar site or another separate site, you know, but I want side by side. So how do we solve that problem? So this is C Windows Microsoft Framework. Was the entire group in your talk, Adam, or just a few people? Okay, yeah, make me feel better. 3-4 people, right? .NET Core is an all-new .NET. It's the core of .NET. It lives in program files, .NET SDK, or you know, user bin, something, something on Ubuntu. And there's multiple .NETs sitting in that folder. I can literally uninstall a .NET SDK by deleting a folder. Okay? I can go out to the command line and type .NET dash dash version. I'm sure you did that, right, Adam?
Yeah,
yeah, thanks. Let's see if I can do something that Adam didn't do. Did you do that, Adam? Okay, did you do this? No? Why won't you let me be great? So I'm going to make a folder called global.json, and I'm going to pin a version of the SDK there. I'm going to pin that down and say I want 1.04. Okay? That's the level of side-by-side. That's the convenience that we're looking for, right? You want to be able to do that where then you could then pin your version down, and all you would have to do would be have that other version on yours. Yours is pinned, hers is pinned. They can live side-by-side. They can't hurt each other. That's one example. In that case there, we're controlling which SDK you're using, not necessarily which runtime. And in this case here, an interesting thing to point out, if I say where is .NET, it's over here in program files on .NET, right? Let's go and say .NET new console, .NET restore, and then let me open up this in a great IDE, and then I'm just going to say console.readline, so it'll stick around a little while. Okay. Say .NET run. I got to make up for being mean to him. Say .NET run. Pops up there. Now it's waiting for me to hit enter, right? So it's holding itself in memory there. So now I'll go over to Task Manager. And I'll look for .NET. And then I will grow frustrated with Task Manager, and I'll close it. And then I will run Process Explorer, because it's better. It's in color. And then I will run it as admin, wait for the circle of patience. Okay. And then we'll go find .NET. That's not .NET. Oh, no, that's not .NET. There it is. So there's .NET. There's two of them. There's that one, the driver, not really a device driver, but it's the runner. And then there's that one. I said .NET run in that folder, and it ran .NET exec, Adam sucks, blah, 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 and it pulled out a .NET core something something DLL deep in the system there. In, well, way down there. Let's go down there. So where are we at here? Bin, debug. Netcore app 1.1. And there's Adam DLL. That's a .NET Core 1.1 application. Why? Because of that global.json that I pinned stuff down to. Notice that Adam is not a executable. He's a DLL. the .NET thing runs it. This is very similar if we talk about how we teach kids now. They type Ruby, foo, Python foo, Go foo, Java foo, .NET foo. Having that runner gives us a lot of flexibility. Even though the runner is the same runner, it's smart enough, if I go back to the desktop, to deal with versions. Cool? Now, so now we put Adam on the web. I'm over here. This is .NET 2. I say .NET new. All of this stuff here, all these templates are the same in Visual Studio or the command line. So you have all, going file new from the command line now is the same as going file new in Visual Studio. That's important because not everyone's going to use Visual Studio. They'll use Visual Studio Code, they'll use Emacs, they'll use Vim or whatever. So you want to be able to share those templates. Additionally, you can get third-party templates. Did you show that? He's left.
He mentioned it.
Yes. Okay. He mentioned it. Trying to think how I can do better than mentioning it. Did he go to a page with a list of available templates that was edited just 23 hours ago? So these are templates that you can get, third-party templates. Think about this. It's really easy if you want to make .NET new my company and have it be your company style or your open source project or your personal way of doing things. You know how you get your .NET application all the way you like it? That's the way that the libraries you want, the JavaScript you want, and the way you have it laid out. You can make your own .NET new. So you can go and install these at the command line. So if I want to go and get templates for nspec, I say .NET new-i for install, and I suck it down, and the templates themselves are NuGet packages. That's cool. So if I go over into Visual Studio and say new project, see, it says initializing templates. And then let's say we go and open up an ASP.NET Core application. When I say Core 2, look, Angular, React are all in there. That's cool. That must mean that I can come out here to the command line, say .NET new, and I see React right there. So then I think this is React. Say .NET run. This is a .NET new React here. It's got Webpack and NPM and all that fun stuff. Let's go and say .NET run. It says it's running on localhost 5000. Pause for effect. Cool. So now I've got an ASP.NET core app with C#, with Webpack, with React, using TypeScript, and then Bootstrap for the layout, with even patterns on how to do like fetching of data from the server. Isn't that cool? So we're hoping that a lot of people will go and create templates so you can save, you know, .NET new or file new project. And again, I'm not using Visual Studio just because I want people to understand that it is all comers. It is Ubuntu person running Chromium, it's Raspberry Pi person, it's whatever. We want everyone who can use .NET should be using it. So that's cool. Did you show Docker, Adam?
I know,
but it just, it's like,
show us your way.
Show us my way is not going to be as awesome, because Adam probably did it from memory, you know. He was all like copy con, Dockerfile, you know, using like 4DOS commands and stuff, and like built into the thing, and then swooping back and forth between, you know, Adam with his multiple desktops and shoop, shoop, you know, all that kind of stuff, his fancy fonts and his, yeah, but I'm not bitter. Y'all, Adam and I are friends, you know. Okay, just checking. People afterwards like, what was that about? Is he okay? Are he and Adam in a feud? Okay. Well, yeah. See, now I'm just going to like live in constant fear of what Adam showed before. Okay, let me see if I can just do something he didn't do. All right, so I can make a Docker file and say from Microsoft/ASP.NET Core, and the tags here are 2.0. Now, notice this here where it says entry point. That's the now I'm going to run the thing. A Docker file is a description. It's a bill of lading that says here are all the things one needs in order to run in Docker. It says that the directory is going to be in a folder called app, and the entry point is going to be to run.net. It doesn't say .NET run, though. This is an important thing, and a lot of people are getting confused and a little bit frustrated with .NET because they'll go and they'll compare it with something like Go, and the reason is they are off here running at the command line, and they're saying .NET new console. Okay, that's fast. .NET run, pause, 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 and I go, what the hell's going on? And they say, that's slow, and then they'll run it again, thinking that it will be faster, right? Maybe it should be, but they don't realize that .NET run is doing a .NET build and then a .NET publish, and then it's doing a .NET exec. .NET run is a developer time thing. If I say .NET publish, it's going to go and run MS build, and it put that file right there in console. See where it is? .NET core app. So if I said .NET exec bin debug .NET core app console, see that? That's fast. Don't make that mistake. I'm seeing people go to production with .NET run. Okay, so now I'm understanding that every one of you has gone to production with .NET run. Okay, I have provided some value today. Good night, everybody. All right, it took only a half an hour before something of value came out of this talk. So are you like having a moment there? Like, oh, okay, good. Yeah, you get it now, right? You see how fast that was? On .NET Core, it's like 30% faster than it was on 1.0. Because .NET run implies the build and the publish and all those kinds of things. Okay, now here I said publish, and it knows that I'm on Windows. But I could also go like this. I could say .NET publish --runtime. And I could say Ubuntu 16.04-x64. So now I'm on Windows, and I'm going to compile this .NET app as a self-contained app, and now it's going to be in this folder, in this Ubuntu folder. And then I could put that on a USB key and then run it on an Ubuntu machine, and it's self-contained. Make sense? If I was going to build it for a Raspberry Pi, I could say Linux-ARM. Excuse me. You can't run the SDK on the Raspberry Pi. So you run it on your Windows machine, and then you copy it over to the Raspberry Pi, and then you run it from there. Okay? Okay, so now we've figured out .NET exec versus .NET publish. That's really useful. So the entry point into our Docker thing here is .NET calling on that DLL. So that means I need to go and say .NET publish in, I'm sitting in VS Code right now. So we'll go and do that. And then I'm going to, so there's my file, Docker web. I'm making sure that my Docker file is in that same folder, because the publish folder is the folder of the stuff. It is literally published this stuff, okay? Now I've added the Docker stuff from for Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code in this case. Then I can go and say Docker, and it's got all these commands, which is cool. Okay, Docker build image, it says which Docker file, cool, and I'll say Schanzelmann/demos, we'll tag it. It's going to go and call the Dockery stuff for me. Let me see if I can make this a little bigger. Yeah, Docker build, found the Docker file, pulled it out of a certain thing, tagged it, et cetera, et cetera. And it went and it built that Docker file for me. Then I went up to Docker Hub and just made this repository called Schanzelmann Demos. And if I hit refresh, it was 2 hours ago the last time I messed with it. Okay? In this is a webhook. When things get published to Docker Hub, Docker Hub will then tell Azure. Just like you do a Git deploy now, or you use VSTS, a webhook is a way of going, hey, notification, and letting it know. So now, when I push to there, it will hopefully come up here into Azure. So this is my Azure site. I've got about. So let's go back over here and change it to make sure that we made it real, that we're not lying. Okay. So there's the title of the page. Okay. And I'll say .NET publish. Publish implies a build. There's my new DLL and all of my other stuff. Then I will say build image, Schanzelman demos, do the Dockery stuff. I can then run that locally. Docker's a little confusing when you first get started, but it's a lot easier than dealing with like IIS Express and stuff. The other thing that's nice is you can run SQL Server in a Docker container and tear it up and bring it up and pull it down as much as you want. So from a person who's developing on a laptop, you have a much nicer experience. You can literally fire up an all new fresh SQL Server and a fresh Windows machine or Linux machine and run it all under Docker and then tear it down. And then when you give it to a friend or you put it online, you know it's gonna work. So then I will go and say Docker push, and I will push those demos up there. See, it says pushing layer. And then see, it says layer already exists. That first layer, that's me. The layer above me was Microsoft/ASP.NET. And the layer above that was Microsoft.NET Core. And the layer above that, et cetera, all the way to the base image. So this is like, remember virtual machines and how they have like different snapshots that build on top of each other? That's kind of how Docker file system layers work. So now, if I go over here into Azure, I can see my app service. Now, I already have like 20 app services running in Azure. I've got lots of stuff. And usually, I do git deploy. I'll say git add dot, git push Azure master, and I'll push to git. And there, I'm using git as FTP for code. That's cool, and it's convenient, and I like using it. But one of the things that's not cool about it is that I am pushing my code into a Git repository, and I am then asking Azure to build it for me. You can improve that by maybe using like VSTS, where you push into Git in VSTS, and then it builds an image. It's your build server. It can then build a Docker image from your code and then push that over. So then Docker is FTP for code. It's the container for your code. So you get lots of choices. Here, I compiled locally, I built the Docker container locally, and then I pushed that to a central repository and then said, hey Azure, go get it. That's an option. If you're really fancy and you want to deal with like density issues where you want to have your .NET application be 100 megs instead of 300 or 400 megs, you would fire up a Docker container that has the .NET SDK in it, build inside that container, suck the DLL out that you built, and then put it in a tiny runtime container that doesn't have the .NET SDK on it. And then that tiny container can be 100 megs, and then that could run somewhere in Docker. Did you know Raspberry Pis can run Docker now? Like, this is the thing where I think we need to like get our brains around as developers. I see some of you are new. Some of you have been doing this for 10 or 20 years. This should not be frightening. This should be really exciting because the number of options that you have available and the fact that you can play with the open source people that have shunned us in the past. You can do Kubernetes and you can do Swarm and you can put stuff in any cloud. Doesn't have to be Azure. Is really exciting. So here, I've got an app service on Linux. Azure lets you have app service on Linux now. And if I come down here to Docker container, you can see my app service. There it is, Schanzelman demos. It's pulling that. And it can also be pulling it from a private registry. It doesn't have to be in a public place like the Docker Hub. So I hit refresh, and my application is updated. It was updated long ago. Is that cool? All right, no, that's okay. I don't want your applause, no. I want to earn it, and that's fine. Cool, so, no, not even like a golf clap. That's like pity applause. We don't want that. So, did you show Visual Studio on a Mac, Adam?
No.
Ah. Aha! Yes. You will, even though this won't work? What about the fact that I've forgotten the password for the Mac? okay. cool. Oh. I gotcha. Check this out. Forget about the Mac. Okay. In 2003, okay, funny thing about me, I've been in software now for 25 years this year, but I only graduated from college in 2003 because I went back to school, and it took 11 years to finish my four-year degree at night. I think a lot of us have done that kind of stuff. And actually, if I don't know if you know this or not, at 7 years and a four-year degree, your degree credits start falling off the other end. There's like a sliding window of like degree. So then you get a call and they say, hey, you need to take writing 121 again. You're like, why? Well, it's been 7 years and you haven't finished your degree yet. I actually made a deal with the dean of the school that if I could teach C sharp at a 400 level, he would let me hold on to that credit. So I was teaching courses on web services, on NUnit, on C sharp while going to school. And I ultimately graduated with a four-year degree in 2003. One of my senior projects was a tiny virtual machine written in C sharp. It's a tiny OS. They gave us, that's not the right slide deck. They gave us a, where's my slides? That might be it. They gave us an assembly language, and they said, make your tiny virtual machine. Let's go on Google for it. Hanselman, tiny OS. Do I have slides? That's a post from 2005. It's a post from 2007. Do I have slides? I do have slides. Adam, at the end, Adam's be like, yeah, I showed your OS. So I actually did a presentation on it at TechEd Malaysia in 2002. And it was a creation of an abstract virtual machine, and it explains how paging and virtual memory works, and it was meant to teach C#, okay? It's not meant to be interesting or get any work done. It's a tiny VM. So they gave us all these specifications. It's this 32-bit machine, registers are, 32 bits wide, blah, 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 blah. And I had to go and model how a system works. And then I had, they said, well, here's bonus stuff, give it virtual memory versus physical memory. Make it do processes that are multiprocessing, have co-optive multitasking, and I built it up, and I had a scheduler loop and a whole thing, right? And had XML, like every good project from 2002, and then had a whole list of instruction sets and opcodes and all that kind of crap. Fast forward, and I found the code for this thing from 2002. This is before generics. So no cup of tea, just like auto-generated strongly typed collections. No link. It's just idiomatic C# of 2002, okay? Written assuming Windows, assuming .NET full framework, et cetera. I went and I ported it to .NET Core 2.0 because I wanted to see if it was possible, because .NET Core didn't exist at the time that this existed. Okay? And it turns out the only thing I needed to change in my tiny OS was the part that loaded the XML configuration file. And I changed it to JSON, because that's what the kids use today. I can then compile this. If we go and look at the CSproj, which is interesting just in itself, because currently you think of a CSproj and you don't want to open it or look at it. That's the entire CSproj. It says netcore app up there on line 5. There's a section there on unsafe blocks on line 10 where I said I need to be able to do weird pointer math. So I have unsafe marked code, which you can do in .NET Core. You have my app settings file there on line 18 where I had to tell it, copy that over. My configuration file changed from appsettings.config to appsettings.json. And then a couple of package references right there. I haven't updated it to .NET Core. It's on preview 2, so it's like a month ago, but it's still Core 2.0. Okay, here's the part that's cool. I'm going to go to the command line here and type .NET --info. You can see that this is Windows and it tells the version of the .NET and all that kind of stuff. Why not come out to Ubuntu. This is Ubuntu on Windows. You know, we run real Ubuntu now. This is not Cygwin. This is real, actual Ubuntu, 16.04. Okay. I'm going to go to Mount C GitHub. So that's my GitHub folder. Then I felt really good about this. See where it says build and run all tests dot bat? You know that a batch file is close enough to a shell script that if you just put bash at the top of it, it'll work? So I'm actually running the batch file as a shell script. I will then build the .NET project, copy my sample applications over, and then call shell whatever. I'll show you what some of the sample applications look like. They're pretty spectacular. If you've ever done an operating systems class, you know, it's like move AX and that kind of stuff. But this was a virtual machine with an assembly language that didn't yet exist. So they invented it to make us, you know, prove the point. So I went and made visualizers to go and show you what's happening in memory, and we implemented virtual memory and everything. So now I'm on Ubuntu. I'm going to go and go to the mount, call .NET build. This is the .NET that's installed on Ubuntu. There's MS build, again, running on Linux. I could also get this running in Docker. Now it's doing the testing. There it is. So now my CS352 project from 2002 is running cross-platform on Linux. If I had my Raspberry Pi with you, I could show it running on a Raspberry Pi. I got it running on ARM32 as well. So Raspberry Pis and that version of ARM didn't exist at the time that I wrote this, and now I've got it running cross-platform. It took me about 4 hours to port it. You like that? That's memory, right? And these are like, that is the instruction pointer and the zero flag and all that kind of stuff. So now I was having to debug this stuff with this visualizer. So when I did that, I started to realize that that is really like the promise of .NET Core, that I could take this old code. Scott Hunter's got a really cool demo you can see where he took data set code. Anybody using data sets and just afraid to share? Yeah. Don't be ashamed. We love you. He used data sets. He took a data set app running on WinForms, pulled the data set out to a shared .NET standard library, and then brought it into an ASP.NET core application and ran it under Docker. So your portability, right now we think about 70% of stuff on NuGet is .NET standard capable. That's how close we are. And I think we're getting closer every day. Now, let me jump over to the Mac real quick, and then I'll let y'all go, because I think the food is coming. And actually, I'll save you time. Instead of going File, New Project, I'll open up one that we already did. Did the Mac show up yet? 9? Hello, Mac. That's 8. That's 9. Blue. It worked for my Nintendo cartridges, and it worked for this. Okay, then this is Scott Hunter's computer. So I'm gonna change all the settings. Zoom, scroll gesture, keyboard. There we go. Cool. So this is Visual Studio on the Mac. I can say File, New Solution. You can pick ASP.NET Core apps directly in here. But what's cool is just come down a little bit, you can make not just core apps, but like full, complete applications that include multi-platform. So a front end and a back end in the same thing. So if you go and say like, I want a Forms app, it will make you an optional back end. Okay. So in one File, New Project, I went and made this Hanselman app, where I've got an Android front end an iOS front end, an app service on the back end. But look at the app. Look at the iOS app. We've got the UI and the storyboard. Let's look at the main.cs. Run the main. So it delegates to a main. PNGs, some references, Newtonsoft, but no code in there. This app here, this library is the Hanselman standard library. It is within here that we have like the cloud data store. In here, we go to the cloud, call our backend URL right there. We do things like async and await, we check for connectivity, we deserialize our JSON. Remember at the very beginning when I was talking about PCLs and how lame they were, and how we really wanted to make it so you could have code reuse. At this point, it's like 97 or 98%. Now, if you wanted to do something iOS specific or Android specific, call an API that only iOS has, then yeah, that goes into your iOS code, and there are patterns to do that. But when you use Xamarin Forms, effectively, you're getting like 80, 90% free code reuse without having to really do anything. So here, I'm going to do things like get item, add item. Let's do this. Let's put a breakpoint on like add item. So this is a breakpoint on the iOS app. Okay. Then let's go to the back end, which is just ASP.NET, and let's put a breakpoint in there. So now I have breakpoints on iOS, the client, and I have a breakpoint on the server. Then I've got it set here to start up multiple apps, because I'm going to start up multiple apps within the same project. So I'll start up both the server and the client. This will fire up the iOS simulator. So this is an iPhone 7. And then, see the browser just popped up? Here's my web API. I get some nice, this is called Swagger. So I get this nice Swagger. So this is auto testing, basically. I get a nice UI for testing my front end. I can go and add documentation, so you get a test runner for your API. Okay? So there's the Swagger API. Here's the simulator. Let me scale it. Okay. Hit save. So right now I am in add item async on the iPhone. Can hover over the item and I get my watch. Okay. Then we'll hit play. Now we're on the server in ASP.NET. The item has just come in and been automatically deserialized with model binding. Hover over it. And there it is. So real Visual Studio on a Mac, cross-platform, C# code that you already know how to write with 90%+ code reuse. Isn't that cool? So there's a lot of concepts in .NET Core, and it can be a little bit confusing. I would encourage you to take a look at the docs. The docs team has been just killing it lately. If you go to docs.microsoft.com and you click on .NET Core API reference, check this out. You can go in here and you can pick .NET Standard and your version of the standard. Find out if it has the thing that you want and on what versions. It's really, really excellent documentation. And the best part about the docs now is you can edit them. Did you know that? They're just up on GitHub. So this is a really great way if you haven't done any open source before and you want to maybe get involved, help us fix the docs. Spelling errors, code mistakes, run through something and say, oop, you missed a step, whatever. And then you can become a member of the docs team and put it on your resume and say, yeah, I did a lot of work on with Microsoft on that project. That's how I got the job. Right? Another thing that we're working on that you'll hopefully see soon is, you see here you've got some C# and it says copy right here. If you go over to .net, I paid a lot of money for that domain. .net, tell your friends. See right here? My keyboard stopped working. I can go and compile that in the cloud. I can actually click here and go through these whole projects and click run it. We're hoping to get the docs to have similar kind of functionality. So remember at the very, very beginning when I said, how are we going to teach those 15-year-olds with Chromebooks? Yes. Do it like that. So we're thinking about these things. I want you to play with .NET Core. You won't mess up your computer. It won't change your existing projects. You've seen how we can do that. Take a look at our docs. Take a look at our quick starts. Let us know what's wrong. We're constantly updating .NET to try to make it easier. If you have any questions, I'll be outside. Thank you. And thank you, Adam, for being a good sport.